Coming up, how pastors and church representatives in the Dominican Republic and Haiti are working together to help earthquake victims. Also, American Southern Baptists and the children they tried to take out of Haiti, the questions raised. And a famous author whose faith was reignited by a wise rabbi and a compassionate pastor.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. In Haiti, 10 Americans have been charged with child kidnapping. The Americans, all Southern Baptists, tried to leave the country with a group of children. The Americans have denied the kidnapping charge and said they plan to provide for the children who were either orphans or had been given up by their destitute parents in the wake of the earthquake. In Washington, President Obama joined religious leaders for the annual National Prayer Breakfast. Obama spoke of the need for more civility in the public square. He said Americans should work together on legislative efforts in the same way they confront bigger challenges like the disaster in Haiti. He praised that work, saying God's grace has been expressed
by Americans of every faith and no faith, uniting around a common purpose, a higher purpose.
We'll have more on Haiti in just a moment. In other news, the president is expected to meet with the Dalai Lama later this month. The Tibetan spiritual leader will be in Washington in 2 weeks, and his associates have said he will meet with the president then, despite objections from China. Also in Washington, a major change in attitude among the military's top brass on gays in the military. Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told senators that allowing gays to serve openly is, quote, the right thing to do.
No matter how I look at this issue, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens.
Mullen and Defense Secretary Robert Gates said the Pentagon is launching a year-long study to change the current don't ask, don't tell policy, a policy that allows gays to serve only if they keep their sexual identity a secret. An international team of scientists has found that some people in vegetative states can, in fact, have some normal brain activity. Though researchers cautioned that their work needs further study and does not apply to all such patients, their findings have fueled the debate over when or whether some patients should be taken off life support. The findings also raise questions about whether these patients can and should be consulted about their care. Another new report has given credibility to abstinence-only sex education. Researchers in the federally funded study found that students in classes that encouraged them to delay sexual activity were more likely to put off having sex. In the past, studies had indicated that teaching only abstinence was not effective. In Oregon, parents who prayed over their dying son rather than bring him to a doctor were convicted of criminally negligent homicide. They face a possible prison term of a year and a half. Doctors testified the boy could have been saved by medical treatment. The parents belong to a small church called Followers of Christ, whose members practice faith healing. Just last year, the same couple's baby granddaughter died after her parents withheld medical treatment. In Iraq, bombers targeted Shiite Muslim pilgrims in several attacks this week. Dozens died and many more were wounded. One of the attackers was a female suicide bomber who hid among the hundreds of thousands converging on the holy city of Karbala. The victims had been marking the end of the 40-day mourning period that follows Ashura, one of the holiest periods on the Shiite calendar. And now, Haiti. Our managing editor, Kim Lawton, went to Haiti and the Dominican Republic this week to follow local church leaders who are spearheading relief efforts on the ground.
In the dusty Dominican Republic border town of Jimani, there's chaos trying to get into and out of Haiti. The two sovereign nations may share the island of Hispaniola, but they've never been easy neighbors. Nonetheless, the DR has become a major staging point in the international effort to help Haiti's earthquake victims. In the midst of it all, Dominican and Haitian church leaders are waging an unprecedented joint campaign to make sure the aid gets where it needs to go.
As the country closest to Haiti, of course we have a responsibility in serving them. And as the organizations that are here during the earthquake come and go, before, during, and after, we will always be the country closest to them.
Lorenzo Mota King is Executive Director of Social Services of the Dominican Churches, or SSID. The ecumenical coalition is supported by international humanitarian groups, including the U.S.-based Church World Service. Mota King says when the earthquake hit, SSID immediately activated its network of churches.
I've now been working 24 hours a day. It's completely changed my agenda, and it's been completely crazy. But at the same time, it's been a welcome craziness in that I'm able to serve and help the people of Haiti in some form.
Christian Reformed Church of Santo Domingo is one of the local congregations mobilizing to help. It's a relatively poor congregation that struggled to find a generator to power the Sunday night service. Many of the members here are of Haitian descent. And Pastor Pierre Philippe says they've been giving sacrificially to help earthquake victims in Haiti and those who are now in the DR.
Even I've been surprised with the help that the church has sent. They don't give to the church in that way, but with this they feel like they have to. The people are giving from the little that they have.
Philippe, who was born in Haiti, has been trying to help displaced earthquake victims. He delivers hygiene kits packed by U.S. churches, and he finds out information from the victims so that when he travels to Haiti, he can let their families and their pastors know that they're still alive. These women were released from Dominican hospitals but still need a place to recover. They're now staying at a local church in Santo Domingo. One of them is Suzette Fonfon, who is treated for an injured arm and leg, but also has serious internal injuries. She needs surgery, but the hospitals won't do it until they can identify someone to pay for it.
I feel a lot of pain for the people who are suffering, but at the same time, God gives me strength to continue helping them.
And as director of the DR branch of Bible League International, he tries to offer some spiritual comfort.
In this moment, people have very severe emotional damage. This has been caused in part by the earthquake and also by the confusion afterward.
In the border town of Jimani, the Good Samaritan Hospital has set up massive tents for the patients who are overflowing the two buildings on the compound. This has been one of the headquarters for teams of doctors who have come from around the world. It's also a headquarters for faith-based volunteers who have brought food and other relief supplies. Pastor Fidian Orlando Martinez is one of the SSID leaders at the Jimani border.
We've had some people come from as far away as Germany, some really tall people. We've also had some short people come here from Mexico and Peru. We've had people here from Argentina, Korea, and really people all over the world have been coming here to show their support for Haiti.
The DR has been a major corridor for getting relief supplies into Haiti, which is no small feat given the conditions on the ground. Large stretches of the main road are in poor shape. The border is a 5 to 6 hour drive from Santo Domingo, depending on traffic and construction projects. SSID has a warehouse compound next to the border in Jimani. It's a place to store and load relief supplies and to coordinate the logistics for international faith-based aid groups. That's part of Alex Morse's job. He's a volunteer who will be working here for the next 6 or 7 months with Church World Service and SSID. The first shipment from the warehouse went into Haiti within hours of the quake, and they've been stocking up ever since. On this day, the warehouse has a donation of crutches and wheelchairs.
With the number of amputations that have happened, it'll be really useful to have this as people get used to their prosthetics.
There are 1,500 mattresses for the emergency camps of displaced people and some 40,000 bottles of water just donated by World Vision. These supplies will go from the warehouse directly across the border to pastors inside Haiti.
The pastors in Haiti that know the communities and know their needs are able to call us up with whatever things they need, and we're able to secure those materials for them within 72 hours.
SSID either sends the supplies into the pastors by truck or the pastors come and get them. Either way, that can be a complicated prospect. The border crossing is often clogged with vehicles, including those from religious groups. It can take hours just to cross into Haiti.
I'm here on the road between the Dominican Republic and Haiti, and traffic is really snarled up. You can see why it can be difficult to get aid into the country.
Inside Haiti, SSID delivers food and water to five different emergency camps, including one with 10,000 people. The group says their camps haven't seen the food riots other places are reporting.
It's just organized by the Haitian pastors who understand Haitian culture and are able to communicate easily with the people.
One thing I feel is happening is that a lot of Americans are sending resources to Haiti through sources that may not have established lines of distribution there. So there's been a lot of wasted resources that have been lost in that method.
The key, SSID believes, is empowering Haitians to take the lead.
I'd say to all the people who want to help, they have to put their faith in the leadership that's in Haiti. They shouldn't go and do things for the Haitians with the idea that they can't do anything for themselves, but to let the Haitians play a role in the reconstruction of their country.
SSID is already trying to move more operations into Haiti. Since the earthquake, Haitian schools have been closed indefinitely, even in areas that weren't damaged in the quake, such as here in Fonds Parisien. Except for the occasional game of pickup basketball, not much is happening on the campus of this church-run school. So SSID is turning it into a temporary hospital for the overflow Haitian patients in the DR.
It's very important to have a place inside Haiti because a lot of people want to finish their recovery in places where their family can come and visit them, where they feel a little more comfortable, and where it's easier for them to get basic services that they're more familiar with.
The hospital will be ready to go once they find three Haitian doctors who can speak Creole, French, and Spanish in order to work with their Dominican counterparts. For centuries, there's been animosity between the DR and Haiti. Leaders here say the earthquake and its aftermath are changing perceptions on both sides of the border.
Por nuestra República Dominicana.
Pastor Martinez's Church of God in Jimani sponsored a round-the-clock prayer vigil for Haiti, broadcast across the DR with the help of cell phones and the internet. There was an outpouring of goodwill.
To be honest, at this point, I really don't know who's Dominican and who's Haitian. We've been working so closely here. And I think it might be one of the ways that God was working here to bring both sides of the island together. So now instead of being two countries, we're just one island.
One island that still has enormous work ahead.
Kim, welcome back. What about those 10 Americans, Southern Baptists, who were charged with kidnapping? What were they doing?
Well, according to information from the churches that the majority of them are from in Idaho, they were trying to go down there to set up what they called a refuge for orphan children. This was apparently something that had been in the works for some time before the earthquake, and it appears that this group was, you know, seizing the opportunity or, you know, worried about the situation for these children. And so they put together a group of volunteers to go down and try to, in their words, rescue children who were victims from the earthquake.
Presumably, did they know a lot about Haiti when they went down there?
Well, it's really unclear. There have been a lot of conflicting reports in terms of what they knew about the process and paperwork, what kind of paperwork and permissions they may or may not have had, both from Haitian authorities and from the Dominican authorities. And that's part of the problem. It's a huge, complicated situation. You're dealing with two sovereign nations, and the whole situation
is difficult.
But you're
also dealing with great sensibilities among the Haitians about somebody coming in and taking children.
Well, this, of course, around the world, the issue of U.S. adoptions of foreign children has raised cultural sensitivities in many places, certainly in the current environment in Haiti. There's a lot of sensitivities. There are rumors that Americans are coming down and stealing kids. There are rumors that people are taking kids for organ donations. That's all swirling down there in the region. And of course, there is a big sex trafficking problem down there. That existed before the earthquake, and people are worried that it's been exacerbated by the confusion down there. There are Haitian children, Dominican children that are used in the sex tourism industry. So how do these destitute parents know if they're giving their children to, you know, well-meaning missionaries, or they're giving them to sex traffickers? So it is a very complicated situation.
But there is this practice that has gone on before the earthquake for very poor families giving away some children, no?
There is. In fact, there is a common practice of giving children to other family members, perhaps, and those children become almost like indentured servants for an extended family member. They cook, they clean. And my own grandparents were missionaries in Haiti during the 70s and 80s, and my grandmother had Haitian mothers coming to her saying, please take care of my children, take them to America so they can have a better life. My grandparents chose not to do that. They chose to stay in the country and try to create a better life there. Unfortunately, that's a long-term process, and these kids are hungry. You know, they have to be fed tomorrow and the day after that. So it is a very difficult situation.
Kim Lawton, many thanks. We have a story today about Mitch Albom, the Detroit sports writer, columnist, and author whose book Tuesdays with Maury was a bestseller several years ago. Albom's latest book is Have a Little Faith, about the inspiration he got from two clergymen, a pastor and a rabbi. Bob Faugh reports.
The book itself seems slight, but as author Mitch Albom tells those who turn out to buy the bestseller, its message is about the power of faith.
It's about looking at one another and saying, you're a child of God too. Everybody is.
It all began nearly 10 years ago when Albom's former rabbi, Albert Lewis, who was head of the New Jersey synagogue Albom attended as a boy, asked him to write the rabbi's eulogy.
I had never known of a layperson to do a eulogy for a clergy person. I thought those guys had it worked it out amongst themselves. You know, I go first, you do me, you go first, I'll do you. You know, so how I was all of a sudden in this loop was beyond me. I was totally overwhelmed by the idea of my doing it.
Besides, by then, Albom was an acclaimed author and columnist who says he had lost his interest in religion.
I had been raised with faith, and then I basically said, I don't need it much anymore. I'm doing okay, I'm healthy, I'm making money. Most of the people I love and care about are all right. I basically just left it by the side of the road.
But during his weekly visits to New Jersey to talk to the old rabbi, Albom became more and more impressed, not just by the rabbi's wit and his beguiling sense of humor, but impressed mostly by the rabbi's wisdom and his goodness.
I'll pray with you. I'll squeeze your hands, I'll hug you. That I can do.
And over the course of those 8 years, Albom says something was rekindled.
I knew that I learned something every time that I was there with him. And I knew that I felt better about myself every time I visited him and every time I left. I had a very extensive religious education as a kid. I just put it to sleep for a while, and he sort of, you know, shook it loose and woke it up.
During those 8 years, in his adopted home of Detroit, where the unemployment rate is one of the nation's highest, with 30% of its homes and buildings abandoned and one-third of its people in poverty, Mitch Albom met another man of faith.
How many of these are you going to have?
100 of them came in.
100 turkeys?
Henry Covington.
We need to pray.
Now raising his voice to the Lord after an earlier life as a hardcore drug addict, dealer, and violent criminal.
At the lowest point, when I robbed some individuals who I used to sell with, I almost had a nervous breakdown thinking they were coming to kill me. And my prayer was, Lord, if you get me out of this, I'll serve you, I'll give this up. And he heard me, he heard me.
Let's give the Lord a hand, please.
Since 1992, Covington has been feeding and housing the homeless of Detroit in what was, at the turn of the century, one of the city's grandest churches. Now, though, its paint was peeling, its windows broken, and what began in 2006 soon became a gaping hole in the ceiling.
You could fit a school bus through here.
That's how big the hole
was? That's how big the hole was. To heat this, it was costing $5,000 a month during the winter.
Despite the miserable conditions, Covington refused to give up.
You could have, I guess, walked away and said, look, it's beyond repair. You don't think that way.
No, there's all things are possible with God.
And, says Covington, because he had been saved, he felt an obligation to help save others.
I called to him, and he heard me. So I feel that I need to show my gratitude to God by showing someone else the love that Christ showed me.
When Mitch Albom witnessed what Henry Covington was doing, Albom realized Covington and the rabbi were kindred spirits.
And as the rabbi told you, it's how you act. That's the reflection of your beliefs. And that's what you saw in Henry?
Oh, yeah. I saw it right off the bat. He sits there for hours by himself, just looking at homeless men sleeping on the ground and making sure they're safe. He does live his life in a righteous way.
Albom's book, Have a Little Faith, brought Covington so much attention and so many contributions. His church was slowly refurbished. And last year, in a celebration full of joy and praise, Mitch Albom himself climbed to the ceiling, and where once there had been that gaping hole, unveiled a plaque listing all those who had donated to the church. What was patched here, though, was more than a broken roof.
That hole in the ceiling, that represented most of us. We all have holes in our lives, great big voids that need to be filled. And just like the Lord saw fit to bring about the means to cover those holes and seal them up and fix the roof, he did that same type of work on us.
The real story here is transformation, not just of this dilapidated church, which once had a hole in the roof, but of a once cynical reporter who says he had pretty much walked away from his religion and who, because of his encounter with two different men of faith, was himself transformed.
Shortly before the rabbi's death in 2008, Albom told him he doubted the two would meet in another life.
I said, well, come on. I mean, they must have a special section for people like you. You know, you're a man of God. And he looked at me very sweetly, and he said, you're a man of God, too. Everybody is. It was, to me, what I tried to say in this book.
When Rabbi Lewis died, Albom did give the eulogy. Covington's church is now on sounder financial footing than ever. And as a result of the book, Albom created a new charitable foundation.
The thing that makes me the proudest is we started this thing called the Hole in the Roof Foundation to try to help places like this church that help the homeless if they have holes in the roof or windows broken or things like that.
The whole experience did not just make Albom a bigger, richer celebrity. It also changed who Mitch Albom is.
I believe he reignited faith that was dying, you know, that there was still a flicker. And I guess the Lord turned it back into a flame.
Are you comfortable now if I were to call you a man of faith?
I would take it as a compliment. I would try to be worthy of it. I would say I'm a man attempting to be a man of faith. And it's the trying that what it's all about, you know.
It's the journey.
It is the journey.
The journey of a wisecracking, saintly rabbi, a hardcore addict who turned his life around, and a writer who will never be the same. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bob Fall in Detroit.
On our calendar, February 14th is the New Year for Chinese, Vietnamese, and Tibetans. It's a festive celebration that this year will bring in the Year of the Tiger, considered a sign of courage. And next Sunday is also St. Valentine's Day. This weekend, of course, is Super Bowl Sunday, It's an especially big deal for New Orleans Saints fans who've never seen their team in the Super Bowl. Such a big deal that many pastors in New Orleans are canceling their evening services so the faithful can watch the game. Catholic priests got the okay to cancel Mass from their Archbishop, Gregory Amond, who will definitely not be saying Mass that night. He'll be at the game as a guest of the Saints. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from a Hindu ceremony honoring Mahatma Gandhi, the great advocate of nonviolence. On the anniversary of his assassination, Gandhi's relatives poured his ashes into the Indian Ocean.